News, I'm Steve Dorman. In his first televised speech since being sworn in as Pakistan's new prime minister, Imran Khan said the country is in the worst economic condition it's seen and pledged to fix that. BOA asked RAND Corporation senior political scientist Jonah Blank what problems Khan might face in trying to accomplish these goals.
The biggest immediate problem is the fiscal problem, and Pakistan will almost certainly have to go to the IMF for a loan. This has happened many times in the past, and each time the IMF has imposed an austerity program that the government of Pakistan has had difficulty implementing.
In his TV speech, Prime Minister Khan pointed to the growing divide between the rich and the poor and said that he would adopt austerity measures to relieve the strain on the economy and tackle the country's foreign debt, $95 billion. A 6.9 magnitude earthquake struck the Indonesian island of Lombok Sunday, just hours after a 6.3 magnitude quake shook the island. Paul Caruso is a geophysicist at the U.S. Geological Survey.
In that area, there have been six other events of magnitude 6.5 or larger in the last 100 years.
A 6.9 magnitude earthquake that struck Lombok on August 5th killed 436 people, forced more than 350,000 people to flee their homes. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari returned to his country to news of yet another Islamic attack in the northeast. At least six people were killed when suspected Boko Haram jihadists raided the village of Mailari in Borno State last Saturday. One report said 19 people were killed in that event. This is VOA News. President Trump's National Security Advisor John Bolton is meeting with Israeli officials in Jerusalem to discuss Iran. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office says they look forward to discussing ways to roll back what Mr. Netanyahu describes as Iran's aggression in the region. Appearing on the ABC News program this week, Bolton spoke about Iran's involvement in Syria.
Certainly the objective of the United States, of Israel, President Putin said it was Russia's objective, is to get Iranian forces, Iranian militias, Iranian surrogates out of the offensive operations they're in both Syria and Iraq, and frankly to end Iran's support for Hezbollah.
Bolton also said the Trump administration decision to withdraw from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal has put a crimp into the Iranian economy, affecting offensive operations by the Quds Force of the Revolutionary Guard in the region, including Yemen. Venezuelans in limbo near Ecuador's border are defying a clampdown on migrants crossing on foot to escape an economy that is in freefall and food shortages back home in Venezuela. More than 1 million Venezuelan migrants have entered Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Brazil in recent years. Venezuelan Gabriel Malavota is trying to reach Peru with his wife, where they have family, so they can make a new start.
I'm here with my wife hoping for some kind of humanitarian measure from the Ecuadorian government that allows us to enter with our Andina migration card so we can continue our journey to Peru. Because we really want to contribute. We have to work because of our kids. If we don't, our kids will die. Our kids will literally starve to death.
In Brazil, the government plans to send troops to a border town after residents there attack Venezuelan migrants. The town is a major border crossing with Venezuela. More than 2 million Muslims from around the world have started the multi-day Hajj pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia, one of the tenets of Islam to retrace the steps of the Prophet Muhammad 14 centuries ago. It includes reaching the Hira Cave, 700 meters above sea level. Abdul Majid Malik is from the U.S.
This is a hike that the Holy Prophet ﷺ made regularly, and it's amazing that he and his wife Hazrat Khadija r.a. made this hike regularly at their age. And so, you know, it gives you extra motivation to push yourself and get to the top.
Dozens of elderly South Koreans will meet family members in the North later today, nearly seven decades after they were separated following the Korean War armistice in the early 1950s. Get more news at voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bartey in Washington. Today is Monday, August 20th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. The Uganda Medical Association seeks permission from the military to treat detained and wounded Member of Parliament Bobby Wine.
We have assembled a team of 16 super specialists to provide specialized medical care, not only to Bobby Wine, by the way, because there are over 30 who have been arrested, and we've heard of two women in Gulu police cells who are in need of urgent attention.
Dr. Ekwaro Obuku is the president of the Uganda Medical Association. Burundi's opposition hopes for an end to political dialogue when it resumes next month. The ruling coalition in the DRC says its only concern in the coming election is the people, not the opposition. And SADC leaders meeting in Namibia call for the lifting of all sanctions against Zimbabwe.
The conducive Ottoman sphere that has been created in Zimbabwe leading to elections and during the elections is really a clear testimony that the people of Zimbabwe should be seen as part of the international system.
Netumbo Nandi Undetwa is Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, and remembering former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who passed away over the weekend at age 80. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda Medical Association has asked the military for permission to treat detained and wounded Member of Parliament Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobby Wine, who the group says is fighting for his life in a military detention. Bobby Wine was charged last week in a military court with treason for unlawful possession of firearms and ammunition allegedly found in his hotel room. He had been arrested along with other members of parliament for their part in the alleged stoning last Wednesday of President Yoweri Museveni's convoy. Dr. Ekwaro Obuku, president of the Uganda Medical Association, says the group received a request from Bobby Wine's lawyers and his wife that the MP needed specialized medical attention.
What is not clear to us is the extent of his injuries, and Bobby Wine has not appeared in public ever since he was arrested, unlike other members of parliament and others who were arrested with him. So as a victim of torture, we thought that it is likely that he is severely injured and is in need of highly specialized care. He had complained to the wife about being injected with substances that he's not aware of, so we thought we would get him in touch with a toxicologist or a pathologist. He complained as well of back pain in the abdominal area, which we suspected could be damage to the kidney, and we got in touch with two nephrologists. This kind of highly skilled medical practice is not available in the Uganda People's Defense Forces medical team, this we are aware.
So when you say you are seeking clearance from the government, from the military, where?
We are seeking clearance from the military, specifically the Chief of Defense Forces. And if it needs higher clearance, it will be the Commander-in-Chief. But we have assembled a team of 16 super specialists to provide specialized medical care, not only to Bobby Wine, by the way, because there are over 30 who have been arrested, and we've heard of two women in Gulu police cells who are in need of urgent attention.
Bobby Wine has been charged with treason. Am I right?
This is what we understand.
And can you demand from the Uganda military or the Uganda government to treat him in your presence instead of then turning him over to you?
We are willing to provide that service, to go and even treat him in there. But we know those facilities are not there. And therefore, we are purely giving human capital, not necessarily the equipment, if the equipment they say is there. But we know it is not there anyway. So, well, we are not demanding anything. We are simply providing this highly specialized service if it is needed, because it's not clear to what extent his injuries are. And this is what we would like to establish and prevent catastrophe.
And you say that your members, your association, has information that Bobby Wine was tortured?
It is obvious. We have viewed the reports of the Uganda Human Rights Commission. We have as well reviewed verbal reports from his wife, Bobby Chagulani, as well as his lawyers. and established that it's highly likely he was tortured, and we are handling this as a victim or as a case of torture. And the roles of physicians or doctors are clearly spelled out in the World Medical Association statement condemning torture, which is in line with the UN conventions and other international codes against torture.
Dr. Ikwaro Obuku is the president of the Uganda Medical Association. He was speaking with me from Kampala. Heads of state of the Southern African Development Community, NOAS SADC, have called on the international community to lift all sanctions against Zimbabwe in a communique issue over the weekend. At the end of their meeting in Namibia's capital, Windhoek, the leaders said lifting the sanctions would support Zimbabwe in its economic and social development efforts. In another development, the leaders expressed concern over the lack of progress in the implementation of the reform roadmap and national dialogue in the Kingdom of Lesotho. Netumbo Nandi Undetwa is Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation.
Up to now, the main role players in Lesotho, which is the government and the political parties or the opposition, they have not yet come together. And there is a need for what is called a national dialogue. Now, that national dialogue has not yet taken place. Also, the legal reform is one of the institutions that needs to be looked into. And then there's now the military component, which is called the SAPMIL. That SAPMIL is the one which is helping the security apparatus, the defense and the police, so that they can start to really act professionally. So that is why in the communique, there is that emphasis that the Oversight Committee and the SAPMIL was given until November to complete their work there.
On the elections in Zimbabwe, the SADC leaders commended, say, Zimbabwe, Angola for having elections. And you know that the Zimbabwe election, there's a legal process. At the same time, the SADC leaders are calling for the international community to lift sanctions against Zimbabwe. How do you play that?
Yes, what the SADC leaders have said, and that is a fact, Zimbabwe has held very peaceful elections. And all the observers who observed the election in Zimbabwe, they have underlined that point, that those elections were very peaceful. It's true, there's now a legal challenge, and that is why the SADC heads of state and government, they made it clear to the people of Zimbabwe to respect the outcome of the court, which will mean respecting the voice of the people of Zimbabwe. In terms of sanction to be lifted, the sanction needs to be lifted because the conducive atmosphere that has been created in Zimbabwe leading to elections and during the elections is really a clear testimony that the people of Zimbabwe should be seen as part of the international system and to be benefiting from the international economic trade and system like any other country. So it's on that basis that the heads of state and government has called for the lifting of sanctions against Zimbabwe.
Netumbo Nandi Undetwa is Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. She was speaking with me from the capital, Windhoek. Burundian opposition leaders have called on National Dialogue Facilitator and former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa to find a decisive conclusion to the regionally mediated talks when they resume next month. This comes after Mkapa and his team ended a two-day visit to Burundi over the weekend to consult with political leaders on the next dialogue session. Moses Aviarimana reports from Bujumbura.
As part of the East African Community efforts to put an end to the political crisis in Burundi that erupted 3 years ago, the facilitation team that is under the former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa met political leaders and other key stakeholders in the country for consultations on the next round of talks that is expected to take place in Tanzania. After meeting the Mkapa team, Burundi opposition leader and deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, called for the conclusion of the regional mediated dialogue.
It would be better that this session would be a conclusive one, and that there is a need urgent to urgently address the issues of political environment in Burundi so as to enable making up a kind of roadmap to 2020. And we are all committed to give our contribution to build up this nation.
The consultation meeting in Bujumbura came a few weeks after meeting between the African Union, East African Community and the UN Secretary General's Special Envoy to Burundi, Michel Kafando, meeting in Arusha to discuss the political development in the country. Mukapa's team declined to comment on the 2 days' consultations. However, the Burundi ruling party, seen the DFDD Assistant Secretary General Joseph Nakarutimana, said that the party is ready to participate in the next talks.
On répondra au rendez-vous quand ils vont convoquer.
He says that his party is ready to participate in the next dialogue session when invited, and that the political situation in Burundi has improved since the last dialogue session. Burundi government had since 2015 boycotted any dialogue session that included opposition members or activists and arrest warrants accused of plotting the failed coup in May 2015. Agathon Rwasa, a Burundi opposition leader, believes a lot still needs to be done in the country.
They'd better understand that Burundi is in a situation which is a little bit chaotic, because we are having two constitutions cohabiting together. This situation of having two constitutions is unprecedented, and there is a need to address it. You cannot promulgate a constitution yet be in office on the basis of the one you revoked.
The incumbent president's declaration of not running for another term in the 2020 elections could play a positive role in the dialogue outcome. However, the facilitation team said that the civil societies and non-political actors won't take part on the next round of talks, as the current crisis is political. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 20th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for Democratic Republic of Congo, President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition, says the alliance is not worried about any of its opposition challengers in the coming December election. Andre Alain Atundu says the coalition is mainly concerned about the people of the DRC. He says potential opposition challengers like Felix Tshisekedi, Jean-Pierre Bemba, or exiled politician Moise Katumbi are of little concern. Atundu reiterated that the DRC government has issued an international arrest warrant for Katumbi because Katumbi has a problem with the DRC justice system and, as such, the electoral laws of the country.
I think our campaign and our process is running under the rule of law, the legality, the constitution respect, and the electoral law respect. Mr. Katumbi has some problem, some concern with the justice. As you know, to run for presidential election, you must be clean, not be condemned for corruption, for instance, or the recent content in the electoral law. So I think Mr. Katumbi has some concerns with electoral law and the normal law, the civil law of the country.
People were saying that Katumbi was going to be the person that was going to present a serious challenge to you. Now, who do you think you are afraid of the most now? Tshisekedi, Jean-Pierre Bemba, which one?
Our first concern is the people. The other candidates doesn't particularly concern us because, as you know, Mr. Bemba was out for many years, 10 years. And to begin the campaign now, I think it's very heavy for him, objectively. Mr. Chilombo, he delivered the cost of his program, $80 billion for 10 years. So he's running not only for the next term, but for the second term. Is it realistic? I don't think so. Anyhow, our coalition is more concerned to know what people will ask us, what people is waiting for what we have done. So we are prepared to build a program considering our two terms, two late terms in power.
At the same time, it can be argued that President Joseph Kabila and your coalition, having been in power for so long, what do you have to offer? What do you have to show the people of the DRC for which they should elect your coalition again? We see violence continuing to go on in the east of the country, and how do you stop the violence?
First of all, we must see the history. Where do we come? At around the end of last century, our country was separated in about 4 or 6 rebellion, controlled by the chief of rebellion. And now, thanks to Mr. Kabila, now we have one country ruled under the law. It was the same considering economic matter. We have 2 or 3 monetary zones. Now we have only one money, franc congolais.
André Alain Atundu is a spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who passed away over the weekend at age 80, is being remembered by some as one of the finest citizens of Africa who went on to become a servant of the international community. Professor James Jonah is the former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs from 1992 to 1994.
Really, it's dancing. Came as a surprise and very sad, and because he was recently in South Africa and Zimbabwe, as you know, the 100th anniversary of the birth of Mandela, he was there. So it's just too quick to hear that he died.
I read an article where the late Kofi Annan is described as a secretary general who brought strong moral convictions and careful judgment to the job of the UN secretary general. Can you expand on this, General?
Yes, in the United Nations, we had discussed more security issues, political security, military security. But during his term, he dealt with the humanitarian side and the issue of human rights. Those were things which he emphasized during his term of office.
In a speech he gave, I think it was in Africa in the year 2000, he said that poverty and oppression go hand in hand, and that true development means freedom from both. He said no state can be truly called democratic if it offers its people no escape from poverty. Looking around in Africa today, did he speak right?
Yes, yes, of course. Because he was himself from Africa. He was from south of the Sahara, where we have a lot of poverty. And bear in mind that for most of his time in the United Nations, he was in the administrative and financial side. So he saw the UN more in that side, because the way the UN was compartmentalized, the United Nations Development Organization, UNDP, was supposed to function mostly in the developing side. But Kofi Annan brought development into the United Nations forefront.
Before his passing, he founded the Kofi Annan Foundation. He was also a member of the Group of Elders for Africa. How do you think we can remember his legacy, or his legacy can last with us?
Yeah, again, that was another departure compared to previous secretaries general. When they had left, they have gone out to do other things, but not have done what Kofi Annan did, which is create a foundation trying to deal with poverty, human rights. That's a new approach, which we have not seen in previous secretaries general. And as I said at the beginning, just even towards the end, he was dealing with these issues. His statements in Zimbabwe just recently and his statement in South Africa was shown that he's so much concerned about poverty, about human rights, as to how governments should be responsible for the uplifting of their citizens. So these are issues which he continued to emphasize and being involved with the elders created by Mandela. This was the whole purpose. So that kind of leadership was very important to Africa, and for a former Secretary General to be doing that was very, very significant.
Dr. Juna, thank you very much for your perspective on the passing of Kofi Annan.
We miss him very much.
Professor James Juna is the former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs from 1992 to 1994. He was speaking with me from New York City. Our time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin in Nigeria, where Nigeria have until 11 hours UTC on Monday to sort out the running of their football federation if they want to avoid the possibility of being banned by FIFA from international soccer, including exclusion from next month's African Nations Cup qualifiers. World governing body FIFA issued the country with a final warning due to alleged state interference in the running of the Nigerian Football Federation. FIFA's recognized leadership led by Amaju Pinnick and a rival faction led by Chris Giwa both laid claim to the NFF leadership in a disputed election where Chris Giwa got judgment in his favor at Nigeria's Supreme Court. FIFA do not accept third-party interference in its member federations and said the NFF must be led by its elected president voted for in 2014. Habila Azad, a lawyer and counsel to Chris Giwa, insists FIFA cannot ban Nigeria.
So FIFA cannot ban Nigeria because this is domestic affair. This is an internal matter. It is not an international matter. It's not an international issue. The NFF statute says FIFA can only come in when there is an international dispute, not when there is a domestic dispute. You can't continue to threaten African countries. This is what I call neocolonialism. We are being colonized as a country.
Some sports administrators and journalists have reacted differently to the impending ban.
The ideal thing is to abide by the laws governing the constitution of FIFA as an organization. So it's either you're in it or you're out of it. It's the people who govern football locally that intervene and circumvent, so to speak, FIFA rules and regulations. And when you do that, FIFA ultimately frowns at it.
On the FIFA ban, I think, sincerely speaking, that FIFA certainly is just making a mockery of itself.
And now to the CAF Champions League. Title holders Wydad Casablanca of Morocco and Al Ahly of Egypt ground out 1-0 victories at the weekend to reach the CAF Champions League quarterfinals. Wydad Casablanca maintained their unbeaten record in the 2018 CAF Champions League Group C with a 1-0 win over Mamelodi Sundowns at the Stade Mohamed V in Morocco. Elsewhere, Horoya of Guinea beat Port of Togo 2-1 in Conakry, and TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo fought back to force a 1-1 draw at Etienne Sétif of Algeria. TP Mazembe scored a late goal to secure a 1-1 draw in their 2018 CAF Champions League Group B clash against ES Sétif. Zesco United revived their hopes of reaching the quarterfinals of the 2018 CAF Champions League with a 3-0 away win over Mbabane Swallows in Mazini on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, August 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clottier and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Button in Washington, wishing you a productive week.
Hello, I'm Lino Ahmadou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss violence against children and how to best protect this vulnerable population. Our guest is Birgit Lund-Herrington, Chief of Child Protection with UNICEF Uganda. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.